Merlis. Is it possible to decipher the sky menace on the wall? I know I'm a sovereign, but who the hell can I call? A puzzle is one thing, but this is just insane. Whoever wrote this must be in a lot of pain. They see themselves not human, and maybe even a boss. What kind of life do they have, or are they shown any real love? Are they going to harm themselves, or maybe just one of us? I'd probably have to go to one of the papers and cause an almighty fuss. They may have had counselling, or even psychiatric care, but what good does that do them when we do nothing but stare? Society calls them crazy, well, we like to give up tags. But not because of us, the author just blames and brags. They believe they're going to feel a lot. They believe they're going to feel a lot better, but first they must do what they said. Then they'll escape the scared madness. It was something they were fed.
You. Well done, Adam. Well said, Francis, good man. I now like to welcome my good friend from a winter trying to put up the earth in the galing wind. Anyway, my good friend Aaron Lewis, too.
I don't have any poems tonight, but I'd like to share some stories about synchronicity. It's just something that I experience quite a lot. This year I travelled across Canada for 3 months. I arrived in Canada with $500 in my pocket and a bag of balloons, and I travelled across Canada for 3 months. And I was in a place called British Columbia, which is quite near Vancouver. And friends of mine own an organic winery in a place called Kelowna. And friends of mine who live in Kinsale live on a converted school bus, and I lived on this converted school bus for about 3 weeks. It was really interesting being the balloon man in a city. I was known as the local balloon man, and I would get free ice cream from the ice cream girls, get dinners, get drinks. It was great fun, but I was always the balloon man, and I met a lot of cherry pickers, I met a lot of apple pickers, I met various folks, and I always wanted to be who I was, but also have the community of sharing time with other people. So I decided to go south. I went to a place called Oliver, which is kind of just towards the Seattle border between the United States. So I was in Oliver and I was apple picking. And one night I met a man who described himself as a shaman, if you like. And we got into a conversation, and it was really beautiful because the sun was going down, and on the mountain was coyotes on the mountain, and sitting underneath an oak tree in the middle of an apple orchard. It was a beautiful scene. And we just had I think something's powerful about having a conversation with someone when you're not necessarily, there isn't any direct light between the communication. What I mean by that is, like, it's beautiful to sit and talk to someone in candlelight or kind of when the sun's going down. So I think when you talk to someone like that, you talk from your heart as opposed to from your mind or from your ego. So it was a beautiful conversation, and we just started to share stories. And he told me that he met the woman, the mother of his child, and the day that he met the mother of his child, he said that you're going to be the mother of my child, and she was. And it was kind of bizarre, but certainly he met her and he said, you're going to be the mother of my child, and she became the mother of his child. And so we had this interesting conversation, and it started to rain. So I went into his tent, and then started to fall asleep, and I went back into my tent. And this spider went across my face, and it woke me up. And it reminded me of a dream, and in the dream, this guy came to me and said, I believe in animal spirits. The next day I went into his car, and in his car he had a book, and this book was called Animal Speak, which is about animal spirits. So I found that kind of quite interesting. The day that he left me, he gave me a crystal. And this crystal was a piece of amethyst, which is a purple crystal, and it's the birthstone of the month February. And in a place called Thunder Bay, which is in the middle of Canada, they have a huge amethyst mine, and you can go and you can pay $2 and you can buy a pound of amethyst. And so this guy gave me this crystal. I put it in my pocket, and I had about a few hours before I had to go and get my bus. And I went into a jewellery shop, and in this jewellery shop, I walked straight into the jewellery shop, a random jewellery shop. This place is the size of Kinsale. It's a little village called, a little town called Oliver. And I walked into this random jewellery shop, and the first thing I saw as I walked in the door was a cabinet, and inside of the cabinet was a little business card, and then on the business card was the description of amethyst. So I was given the crystal 5 minutes before, and then I walked in the jewellery shop. The first thing I saw was the description of the stone that I had. I found that really interesting. Then I went to Vancouver, and when I was in Vancouver, I went into a jewellery shop, and I wanted to get a hole put into it, a shell that I had, and I wanted to make a necklace to give to a friend. And I said to the woman, I said, can you put a hole in the shell? And she said, I can't, but I know someone who can. And the name of the guy's company was called Amethyst Creation. So it was like all of these connections to the amethyst. Next thing that happened, I'm in Vancouver, and I was working at the Vancouver Fringe Festival. I was making balloons for people who were having drinks after the theatre shows and things like this. And I noticed a couple. I noticed this guy with a beard. What am I like at the time? Anyway, long story short, I met people who knew him, who knew the guy who gave me the stone. And then another story was, I was in Newcastle just before New Year, coming back home, and I walked into a shop in Newcastle, and the name of the shop was called Amethyst. And I walked into the shop, and after the conversation of trying to explain the story, I'll just try to explain to you. The woman gave me a rock of amethyst, about £50 worth of amethyst for free, just from telling her the story. So anyway, that's a little bit of that. And one more quotation, which takes us not even a minute. It's the coming back, the return, which gives meaning to the going forth. We don't always know where we've been until we get back to where we were. Only where we were may not be as it was, because of who we have become, which is, after all, how we left. Thank you.
And so we have Joe Speedy.
Now for something totally different. Maybe Gonal. She's a teacher in a secondary school, and it's rough stuff. Oh, it's rough stuff. And the principal is not very helpful, and he hides away in the office. And the pupils are very entertaining, and they make bombs and things like that. And the last time I read, I described it that they put the bomb outside the principal's door. And this is a continuation of what happens then. Dear principal, I knew there was nothing to worry about. John, the boy I sent to your office yesterday, appeared out in the yard after the bang. We were all out there at a safe distance, waiting. His face looked as if it had been shoved up a chimney, his hair sooty and standing on end. It always does that, however, since he puts eggs or something in it, so that was no great concern. The corridor near your office will, I understand, need to be repainted at least. I knew that bomb wouldn't work properly. Our kids, they're just born failures. When you didn't even appear out of your office, not even after the bang, we were beginning to suspect the worst. I sent James McCarthy in to check, and he said there was a bad smell all along the corridor outside your room. He noticed smoke coming from under your door. You're smoking again, aren't you, Principal? Heavily. You ought to be ashamed giving such bad example to our students. Well, the devil makes work for idle hands. No wonder they're setting off bombs. They're beginning to model themselves on you, I fear. They see you as a role model, all smoke and no fire, irresponsible and totally evasive. James said he knocked at your door, but you wouldn't come out. Some things never change. Some people would need a bomb under them to get them moving. Don't worry, though. While I know now that meeting you in person is not possible, I will maintain my correspondence with you. It is, after all, one of your few links with the real world. We'll write again soon. Yours, Maeve. P.S. What about South Pacific for the school musical? Now there's an idea. There is an island in that which might both suit you and your Robinson Crusoe tendencies. It would suit our pupils too, you know, the lotus eaters, you know, the ones who smoke hash on the side. Valley high, valley high. That's it.
Just before I start this point, I want to apologize to anyone here who lives on the Douglas Road, because this poem is called the Douglas Road. So I don't mean any harm. So basically, the poem is about the houses. If anyone knows the Douglas Road, going out of Cork there on the left, the beautiful houses all along the Douglas Road. So the poem is about them. I suppose they're really old houses and. They're nice in the houses basically on the Rochestown Road. The Douglas Road. Tell me about the mansions on the Douglas Road. The big broad houses and the people deep within. The doctors and solicitors. The stockbrokers and builders. That timber teak facade and Gothic pose. That Tudor style on Wycliffe and on Brief. The long gardens running to the gates. Unhindered by the ritual of locks, their simple stature security enough for 80 or 100 years. At Christmas from the passing bus I watch the garlands and the Christmas trees and tall front rooms, real holly draped across the marble mantles, not gaudy but select. Some old codger next to me watched them from on top the Douglas tram in 1939. He grunts disdainfully as we pass by. These are beyond our mortal reach. The kind of house, however rich you are, you've never quite outbid those in the know. The soap mad crew, whose money isn't money. Where legal tender is school ties and framed pictures of junior rugby teams from long ago.
I could have thought about the housing. They should build their own houses out of Ireland, you know. That's another story. Next up, Patricia Welsh.
I'm supposed to be one, isn't it? Hey, this one rolls about 10 years ago. Hello, did you hear me?
Yep.
Now, let's close the session. My heart is full and sore of ragtags and flying things that sing, and what's more, I can't contain the buzz. Studying the rise and fall of contentment, hoping I know its depth, the slow burn of refusal, as smolders, crackles, shoot the flame into a state resembling death. Cold toes stretch over the bed. Accept me somehow, instead. And keep the little black dog from the cat's lap. It has been born. My heart is full and sore, circling around carcass. The very warm itch says, please don't kiss me like that. Wolverine, I am not likely to catch your prey. Circling. Around this cryptic wasteland, there's nothing that awaits me. I bleed and bleed and bleed to take the weight off, to give a sign that my body has potential and it's all wasted. Time enough, yet though, you know when you meet them. I would rather scatter my calories into production less fruitful, cheerful, less fruitful, but I wish the price is infinite more satisfying. The storm, I say, is coming down. Those windows and the doors, light the candles, let watch from below. The fire on the horizon leads to death, but as the storm, the rain extinguishes. He does rise and chant. Come home, loved one. We're all worried for you. I said, no, not in the storm. I'm safe where I am. Come home sometime. I will not. I have no home. It's cold outside, and as Christ wills, the rain and the winds and the lightning commence their symphony. As glorious a sea in the dark as was back then, when man, woman, and animal were holed up in the ark, chasing the promising land. Christ was gallant in defeat, when the earth bowed down in unison to the tearing dark, and night light smelling of blood. None of us had any choice but to arise from slumber and watch the debacle taking place amongst the damned. If the Lord himself had risen, if God had been on our side, he would extend the time of mercy further, but fuck it, we blew the chance. I light a cigarette, and the light reminds me of nights when we were all divided in terror and remorse. I have not come to create unity, but divisions. 2 against 3 and 3 against 2. We march to the ark without war cards, so to speak, and click, 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 we marched. It was a long night. The sun never rose. The moon was bleeding, and none of the doctors in the water had cured his hemophilia. I don't know where I'm going. Tell me, where are we going? Everything happens in 2 and 3s, and care has never come singly. Care and attention to detail was never a virtue to a vulture. Circling, even the bones lame. Love, my dear, is a treasure, lying in wait in your own heart, to give you away to the highest bidder. Does it have to be the highest bidder? When God and his angels rested his whole machine on the earth, it was said, holy, holy, holy God, Gloria in excelsis. You come here, now the rest of you fuck off. I watched from inside with a cigarette in my hand, as the light gave me freedom to speak, make comments that would save the states and kingdoms making up the world. Microbands of terror wandered this way and that way. Anyway, I was watching, I would not be called. I remembered my soft machine and the pleasures that punctuated its history. Now I cannot write. I remain in the bunker, remembering the elves. A wild machine can offer us loyalty and staying power, and freedom from remorse. I finish my cigarette, and all is light with lightning, and the dead arising from the desiccated corpses, a way to logical conclusions. And all that happens in a flick of a switch, will I arise, cold from a bunker, arising to Jesus' call to come home, in space it takes to light a cigarette. Thanks.
I just say that was well done. Next up, Ray Maher.
Very to. Her breast falls delicate from her skin, her hair away and down, covering the remains of her soul, that she is still shaped human and female, maternal and giving, in her eyes, desperate appreciation of the life we will have. And when I think of her, I am inflamed by her rich and passionate hair, fire-like at my side, and when alone in myself, my thoughts are to her, that I hope she is with me on my travels and journeys to God, that the mothers may forgive me for this swaying and grant union between us, and that she can wrap me up and protect me from myself. That I long desperately for her contact, her word, her smile upon me, showing she too is in this thought, that we can exist together in longing. That I look out for her and her me, that I think more that I am needing within me the strength she carries, and only if together could we show the world our love. That there should be nothing between us hindering us, no ancient and long-standing iron fist, that there is no spiritual gain from being apart, there is nothing wrong in this togetherness. This is the net one. It was kind of, it was written in John Hensie's, and they had a kind of art show that came from that, and an hour with Beamish, so that helped. It is a step out of hell and blood soaked. Pained nakedness of these women surround that being, that king, when he is kept inside for a future time when this stout brings truth to the fore. He came over to speak with me. As lonely I stood, stumped, slouched and careless away from my mistress. She, for her part, spoke wildly to passers-by and flirted helplessly with rich patrons. There is nothing in this patient silence anymore. The long twisted chaos, the chorus, searched and lost in her bed, neglected hairs. Her eyes would follow loneliness from my being, endlessly clutching it, looking stagnant still, but he would walk around understanding the people there. The charcoal waif drawing expresses a memory of a lost early morning expression. He has felt the senseless being left, left, left. Where are those we seek, see out and follow, the shy and reserved forced artist? I found life in you, the rafters, the drink, my dark and stout, proud man, endlessly persuasive and coherent. Oh, that I would follow you helplessly into the abyss.
That was great, mate. Well done. Hope to see you again. Next up, EDM Greenford.
Sam.
Yeah, Sam Greenford.
I can't remember.
Just something short and simple. The story of two is now the journey of one, and the light that illuminates both has been lost in their parting, the world's darker for it. They will not meet again in this life. When the path is at its end and they have finished their journeys, they may meet again in the haven of the final rest, and the light that surrounded them in life shall sustain them in the hereafter, evermore, ever long.
Cool, lovely to hear your voices as well. And next up, we have Larkin Murray.
Bill Mann, who is unusual woe wife has died, an old man, and his daughter has gone to America, and he's kind of wondering what's going to happen to him because he's getting old, he's nowhere to look after him, he's not any more family. But it's got a happy ending. Well, the song was really, but we're told that the daughter came back afterwards, so it was okay. So you don't need to worry about it.
Go May she tell of my love.